Success Match Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
Welcome to the Brad Sussmat Show. I am Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, filling in for Brad, who has the day off. And I love when I get to take his chair. Sorry, Brad, but I just do. All right, we got a lot of great sports to talk about. I have to just get this off my chest, though. I have been obsessed for the last probably 12 hours about the Powerball. I do not play this thing. I don't think I've ever bought a ticket. But what did I read? It's like at $800 million or something ridiculous.
$775 million.
That is, Eric, that's incredible. And I was thinking this morning, I literally woke up thinking about the Powerball, and I'm going to buy tickets even though I don't. Is if I wanted, if I was the only one, would I invest some of that money in a sports team? To be an owner would be a dream, but it also seems like it's not a great financial proposition.
Yeah, it depends. Some franchises that don't win still make money. I don't quite know how that works.
And would you take the lump sum, or would you, you know, be smart and have it divvied up?
I'd probably be Bernard Gilkey and just have it spread out over a long period of time, or just live off the interest. But I guess I heard on the radio this morning you have like a 1 in 243 million chance of winning.
The odds are not good.
I guess some people in Phoenix won $50,000 each, which. Not a bad consolation prize.
Not at all. So. And it always, I watch these shows all the time, the lottery winners who blow all their money. And it's like a huge percentage of people that win, Powerball, a lotto or whatever. And it blows me away that you just don't realize once taxes come through, once you buy that your new ride, you buy this furnished house, it disappears. So listen, people out there, if you win this Powerball, be smart about it. Get an advisor. Do something. But I don't know. If it gets up to $800 million, I win it, I'm going to think of investing in some sports team. Will Ferrell just did. I just saw this on the news, right?
Do you play? Do you play the lottery?
I never play.
I don't think I've ever once played. I got a couple cards as a couple lottery tickets as gifts for Christmas, but I've never actually gone to a store and purchased a lotto ticket. But why not? Maybe I'll take $10 and... It's worth a shot.
It is absolutely worth a shot. And just a tip, and we'll get to sports. The majority of winners are the ones that get random numbers. No, you know, don't play birth dates or anything. But if you do random numbers, those are the ones who win. All right. Speaking of winning, Cardinals obviously have a very big game next weekend. We don't know who the opponent is going to be. We've got a couple of matchups this weekend. On Saturday, it's Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Kansas City, and Houston. And then on Sunday, I think the one the Valley cares most about, we've got Seattle, Minnesota, Green Bay, and Washington. All right, who would you want the Cardinals to play most, Cardinals fans? Who is it? Minnesota? Adrian Peterson, does he scare you? Is it Seattle? How do you feel about Washington? Which of those three teams? For me, the absolute worst opponent for the Cardinals, and I think it's going to be the Seattle Seahawks. And I covered that Cardinals-Seahawks game. And listen, I know that when teams are playing for seeding, players tend not to get fired up. I mean, I think that's just a reality of life. But I think that game should have scared Cardinals fans a little bit. I spent a lot of time in that Seattle locker room. I was doing the Seattle story. The swagger in that locker room, the confidence in that, the post-game press conferences, this is a team that's feeling very, very good about itself. And I know Richard Sherman is a guy who always feels good about himself, but... I don't know. I think that is a scary NFC conference matchup. I would much rather see, if I was a Cardinals fan, I think the matchup I'd want to see is Washington. I know Kirk Cousins is leading, I think, the league in completion percentage or something. I think that's a better matchup. I think if Washington comes here, and the opponent will be here, if Washington comes here, I think that Cardinals fans should not be that scared about it.
I gave you false information during show prep.
What did you do?
The three teams are either Green Bay, Washington, or Minnesota.
Oh, we're talking for the next week. I thought talking for the next couple weeks. I'm sorry.
Oh, no.
That's what
sorry,
I was just
for the
in general.
Sorry.
No, that's
just,
all right.
Just to clarify.
Yeah, Green Bay,
I don't think Green Bay is going to win tomorrow or whenever they play Sunday. I guess it's whenever they play Washington. I don't think the Packers are going to win. And I think if the Packers do win, the Cardinals will be able to handle them as they did a couple weeks ago in Glendale.
Right. Well, the Aaron Rodgers, I don't know what's happened there. A lot of people are saying it's tired. In fact, I'm hearing the same thing about Aaron Rodgers that I've been hearing about Tom Brady. You know, people questioning his health, the sort of energy level he has. But even, I don't know, I wouldn't want to face, I think if I was a Cardinals fan, Aaron Rodgers, even if the Packers aren't playing well, he's still Aaron Rodgers, and you just wonder what could happen. I just think Kirk Cousins is and the Washington Redskins are more beatable in my mind. So, what's that? What did you say there, Eric?
I said we should transition now to the title game.
All right, let's talk title game. All right, college football. We know Monday, a big game here in town. We've got Clemson. We've got Alabama. This is for the national championship. This is the second year of the college football playoff.
Wait. The game's Monday?
Yeah.
Really?
Eric?
Oh.
Bad. Eric is trying to make a point. That's Eric Sorensen. Trying to make a point that college football, he feels like there's not a lot of buzz in town. And Eric, granted, I don't see a lot of people downtown wearing the Alabama Clemson gear. There's not a lot of buzz about it. But this is a different setup. This isn't like the Final Four where people come in a little bit earlier. I think fans are starting to come into town today. The teams aren't even both of the teams arrive late this afternoon.
Well, the school is back in session, right? I believe, for both Alabama and Clemson. So it's, like you said, it's not the traditional build-up. Like, most times when you go to a bowl, the teams arrive 5, 6, 7 days before the game.
Right.
These two teams aren't going to get in until tonight, and they're going to play on Monday. So part of the reason why there isn't more buzz is you don't see the practice footage from Scottsdale Community College and Pinnacle or wherever these teams practice, and you don't see them at the zoo or going through all the different activities because, you know what? They're not here yet.
Right.
So the buildup is not, it's not necessarily their fault. It's a little bit of timing. And just, again, this is just my opinion. When I'm out and about and I'm in a grocery store and the people in front of me are talking, chit-chatting with one another, it's all Arizona Cardinals.
Right.
There's really nothing right now about the title game. So.
No, I'll give you that. I think anything football-related in this town is Cardinals talk. And it's, you know, the reality is it's Clemson and Alabama. And as talented as those teams are, those are the two teams that obviously deserve to be here. Goodness, Clemson hasn't even lost a game this year. This is a South, that's a Southeast, and there's not a real regional connection, I think, with these teams. That's sort of a whole different world. So I think as far as people in the Valley talking about it, there's not a lot of buzz. I think there will be more buzz this weekend with the teams in town. And you're right, Eric, I think we'll start seeing some footage, practices, the press conferences. It's funny, the press conferences tomorrow, media day, the one media day they have, is open to the public now, like they do with the Super Bowl. And so everybody is sort of capitalizing on this whole, you know, let the public in. It is very much not about the media these days. It's very much about monetizing the opportunity. And, you know, as a media member, I hate it. I'm sure there's going to be somebody walking around in a wedding dress asking some of these players ridiculous questions. But, you know, tough times, but they don't need the media as much anymore, as much as that breaks my heart. So there'll be more buzz. I just don't think it's going to happen, you know, right now. I think we're going to see a little bit more in the next couple days. And as Eric mentioned, football in this town right now, the Cardinals are king. They own this community. All right, we're going to talk about that and a little more. Coming up, we've got Jude LaCava, Fox 10, who's going to give us his opinion on the state of, you know, what we talked about, college basketball in the future, but also college football. What does he think about the national title game and some of the local teams in town, like the Suns? Where is that headed? So we'll talk with Jude also. I want to get into it a little bit later. State of ASU football, there's been a lot of defections going on with coaches going other places. There's been some players, some turnaround. Another ASU sort of related story, Dirk Cutter has become the hot topic right now for head coaching candidacy in the NFL. I want to share some of my thoughts on when Dirk Cutter was at ASU and my feelings there. And a little bit of news today, Cardinals, it came out that offensive coordinator Harold Goodwin is interviewing for the Tampa Bay job. Does that concern you as a Cardinals fan that there could be another change on that coaching staff? That those Cardinals seem to do just fine no matter who they lose or gain, but that one will be an interesting storyline to watch. Okay, I am Paula Bovin. I am filling in for Brad Sussmat here on Sports 360, AZ.com and AZCentralSports.com.
For unique angles, content, and guests, check out our podcast center available 24/7, 365 at Sports360AZ.com.
Welcome back to the show. I am Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, filling in for my friend Brad Sussmat, who is slacking off, taking the day off, doing something. We are streaming live here on Sports360AZ.com and, of course, AZCentralSports.com. And now, I would like to introduce one of the best media guys in town. Always had the respect of the print journalists, and print journalists can get kind of snarky sometimes with TV journalists because sometimes we feel like they're not out there covering thing, covering events. Jude is always out there. We are talking about Jude LaCava, longtime Fox 10 sports director and good friend of the show. How you doing, Jude?
Paul, Happy New Year. How are you?
I am good, thank you. I was. I have to tell you before we get into really important stuff that I was at some Italian-American event, not an event. They have some foundation there in North Phoenix. Some guys are playing bocce ball, and I stopped by to check it out. And you're like their Italian hero, Jude. They were all asking.
I'm really big in the bocce ball.
You really are. Big.
And anything that's close to marinara sauce, usually I trend well there.
Yes, you clearly did. So, all right, enough about bocce. Well, it's a great sport. I think we should talk about it.
You know, it's that brotherhood thing.
Yeah,
you know,
it is. I know. There's just that connection. All right, if you, Jude, had the opportunity to say the team the Cardinals would play next week that you thought they would have the best chance against, would it be Minnesota, would it be Green Bay, or would it be Washington?
I think it's Washington because they don't put a ton of pressure on the quarterback. I think that they've played well, and Cousins really has played well. And I find it interesting that normally you get the cliche, you know, it doesn't matter who we play in the first game from Carson Palmer, but he actually said earlier this week, we'd like to play Washington. And I think that is kind of code for, we know what Green Bay can do. They're still a sleeper with Aaron Rodgers, although I don't see them beating Washington. But I think Washington puts the least amount of pressure on the quarterback of the teams in the postseason on the NFC side. So I would lean that way. I think they can beat Green Bay, and I see Seattle and Minnesota really close. That's a tough call, but I think Washington comes to Glendale.
Yeah, no, I do too, and I think that would be a great matchup for the Cardinals if that happens. Let's spin forward a little bit. If it comes to a situation, Cardinals win, if they possibly would play Seattle again, how concerning is that for you, based on what we saw, and how much should we take out of that loss?
I think it's the best thing that could have happened, if I'm really rationalizing, is the loss to Seattle, because as Bruce Arians said earlier this week, and it really is true statistically, is to beat a really good team three times in one season is very, very difficult. And, you know, I'm not letting the Cardinals off the hook. They, you know, certainly they would have loved to have finished with 14 wins, but Seattle didn't want to finish with two straight losses. I'm more concerned technically, Paul, about the loss of Tyrann Mathieu and how teams are really picking on Justin Bethel opposite Patrick Peterson. So, you know, are they the same defense without arguably in Pro Football Focus rated Tyrann the number one defensive back in all the NFL? How do they adjust to that? And I asked James Betcher that question. He says, you know, we're working on it. We're trying to do the same things. And I asked Gerard Powers the same thing. And he said, look, we're trying to figure out how we can move our personnel around to get the same results. But I see a really good defense, but not as good, obviously, without the Honey Badger. And I see a few areas of concern in that secondary.
You know, I've talked to Bethel a lot, and I'm sure you have too. Really impressive guy. And, you know, we know his skill on special teams. We know the position he's playing now. It's you know, it takes time to become a very efficient in the league. How do you think, though, mentally he's prepared to sort of handle the role? I mean, everybody's talking about it. They're talking about Justin Bethel is going to be picked on. How do you think he's dealing with that?
You know, it's sometimes it is as simple as what Betcher said yesterday. It's a matter of the more time he gets out there, the better he gets. But he's had limited time out there. He has not played a lot at the cornerback position. And I think it's a concern. I think he's intelligent. He's athletic. He's what you want. It's just a matter of, you know, the reps you have played at that position over your, you know, relatively new career. So that's a concern. And then I think you have to look at, you know, when I talked to Nick Rapone early this year, the secondary coach for the Cardinals, he said, there isn't anything Tyrann can't do. Blitzing the run, covering a tight end, making just improvisational plays. They missed that playmaker out there. I don't think there was a better defensive back just in terms of what he could do all around the field. So you have to look it up, how that plays out. You have to look, too, I think, at the offensive line, because when we've seen aggressive fronts like Minnesota or Seattle, really pressure that offensive line, it's had a tendency to break down a little bit. And I want to see more continuity and consistency in pass protection. And, of course, if you smother that run game like Seattle did in Sunday's game, now you really affect Carson Palmer's play-action ability. So those are the two areas of concern I see moving forward.
Jude, word came out, I think yesterday, today, that Harold Goodwin, the offensive coordinator, has interviewed or is going to interview for the Tampa Bay job, that there's interest there. If that happens, how much of a loss do you think that is for the Cardinals? And, I mean, I've been impressed how this team seems to handle, you know, coaching changes just fine. They lose assistants, they reload. How big of a deal is this storyline?
I think it's big for in a couple of good ways. One, look how Bruce Arians has really fostered the ability to cultivate top head coaches. When you look at now his stamp with his coaching tree, Todd Bowles, the number of guys he's got in the college coaching ranks. I think it goes back to his Temple days and just how loyal he is to players and coaches that have affected him, whether it's Tom Moore, who's 76 or 77, or Coach Pratt, who's 80. I mean, Paul, think about this. This is one of the most unique coaching staffs in the history of the NFL. I mean, you've got guys in their late 70s at 80. He was in Super Bowl I, Coach Pratt, and here he is 50 years later,
incredible,
maybe approaching another Super Bowl. I think when you look at Goodwin, you say that's what you want. That is the impact of Bruce Arians and what he's doing, that they want to interview Goodwin. I think Dirk Cutter, interestingly enough, with the ASU connection, is probably the front runner at Tampa, because the league is going the way of Bruce Arians, quarterback gurus that are aggressive play callers. And Cutter falls into that category. You know, he had his faults as ASU head coach in terms of media and recruiting, but when you talk to his quarterbacks like Rudy Carpenter, brilliant, brilliant play caller, strategist. I think Cutter's the inside guy at Tampa.
Yeah, and it's interesting because I'm hearing his name pop up for other jobs. The 49ers have mentioned him. Philadelphia has mentioned him. He just seems like a hot commodity now, and interesting. And you mentioned ASU. I was going to ask you about that next, Jude, and we're speaking with Jude LaCava, Fox 10 Sports. This is the first offseason I have felt, what's the best word to explain it? For fans, I feel concerned for them about the program, and I have not felt this way about ASU. I've been a very big backer of what Todd Graham has done. I believed in it. I believed in how he sort of cleaned up the program, all those 10-win seasons. You know, it wasn't just how they lost, though, this year. It was some of the things that are happening with coaches leaving, some issues with players. What are you feeling right now about the state of ASU football?
I couldn't agree with you more. I think that if you look back to this early success, the first 3 years, you watched a quarterback that really fit in Taylor Kelly, and you had a great playmaker in Jalen Strong. And now when you don't have that system matching up to personnel, Mike Bercovici, in my mind, didn't fit the system. You have all kinds of warts surfacing here. And I don't like the fact that, you know, you lose really loyal, longtime assistants to Coach Graham that have said, I'm leaving for Memphis, and Coach Norvell, Coach Long, Coach Ball, Coach Randolph, who I think never really wanted to be kicked up in administration, still wanted to coach. Mm-hmm. It is cause for concern. And I think when you look at situational football decisions, as late as the Motel 6 Cactus Bowl, you say, Coach Graham, what's going on here? Timeout on kickoff, not going for the two-point conversion, not adjusting your secondary as Quishy Brown continues to just get burned out there on an island. I think Coach Graham's at the crossroads. And when I say that, I say, can he really be that hands-on guy at mm-hmm. the Pac-12 level? And that means his hand in everything, special teams, offense, defense, the way he got in the face of Coach Slocum. That's embarrassing. You don't want your program to be perceived that way nationally. So the question is, can he look in the mirror? Can Ray Anderson say to Todd, you got to start delegating here. This conference is too sophisticated to just run this thing like a high school program. So I agree with you. I think Coach Graham's got to really take a deep breath. Chip Lindsey, I don't know enough about him. He's in the program 3 weeks. He's calling plays.
Right.
4 or 5 years ago, he was coaching high school. This is the most sophisticated X and O conference in football, the Pac-12. And I do worry about, is he filling some of these positions with coaches he can kind of control as opposed to getting the best available OC. That's my biggest concern right now.
Well, and you know, and I know that Graham has taken pride in sort of finding young talent, and certainly with Norvell, he did that, and some other coaches. But it sure felt like once Bo Graham left, that just that whole thing was out of sync. I think they were in such a sort of a rhythm and just all really tuned into each other. And all these changes makes you wonder sort of where this coaching staff is headed. And you're right. I think there's got to be some soul searching by Graham. Some of the mistakes you mentioned, you know, going for two, not going for two. I mean, all those things are real issues at a big time program. So you're right. I agree. I think there's a lot of soul searching that's going to have to go on at ASU. Now, we know, Jude, there's been a lot of soul-searching going on with the Suns. It's been a tough road, to say the least, with what's been happening there. Where is your head at what they should do? I mean, do you think, a lot of people are talking now, just play the young guys, just, you know, blow it up, build for the future. Were you encouraged at all? They finally got a win the other night. Where is your head with what the Suns should do right now?
I'm reminded of one of my favorite movies, Bill Murray and Groundhog Day. You know,
yeah. Absolutely. It feels that way.
It feels that way, and we're back. You know, it's almost, it's not that far from the low point of the Lindsey Hunter time frame. And I say that because if he was going to get rid of Jeff, the more likely choice would have probably have been Jerry Seastein because of his experience around the league. But you blow out your assistants, and then you elevate some young guys. And I think the young guys are really good. I think Earl Watson's going to be a really, really top-flight coach someday, but very young and very new to the profession. Here's the interesting irony to me, Paul. Robert Sarver gets called out for criticizing millennials like Markieff Morris for not being able to handle a setback in Dan's conversation.
Right.
But I'm told that Robert went to the players, and the players said the assistant coaches, for example, kind of they've lost their voice with us. So he fires them both. So he listened to the millennials.
Right.
His roster, to get the input to make that big decision, two of your most experienced assistants, and then he calls out Markieff in the same breath. There's an absurdity to this
sure.
that strongly suggests that he is still meddling, still believing that he can have a heavy imprint on this basketball team, and unfortunately it's to the negative. I think what you have to do is what I've consistently said over the last 4 or 5 years. Go get the most experienced GM with great credibility to run your basketball operations. Ryan McDonough, to me, would have been a very good number two with his metrics and his energy, and then start over. I think it's the only way you can go. I believe Jeff Hornacek's a good coach. I think he's a brilliant basketball mind. I think the roster has changed so much. I think there's confusion up top. There's fear up top. And here we are again, that vicious circle that says, here we got to start and rebuild. And they had every intention of going into the season with the hope of making the playoffs. It's really disappointing to NBA fans in this town, and sad because it was such a reputable franchise for so many years. It's on the job training for the guy at the top. It's Lon Babby, who's an agent, not a basketball guy, having his imprint on this team the last 4 or 5 years. We're back to square one.
No, we are. And, you know, when Robert Sarver took over, there was a lot of sort of questions about, and this people who can be successful in other businesses aren't always successful leaders or owners when they enter the sports realm, because it's such a different animal. You're dealing with, you know, highly paid athletes, you're dealing with metrics, you're dealing with things that typical human resource departments aren't dealing with away from the sport. And I know there was a lot of concern about how a successful banker would be as a successful owner of a sports franchise. And the only way it really works, Jude, and I think you're alluding to it, is if you surround yourself with people who do their job and do their job well. And I agree with McDonough. I think, you know, this is a guy who's paid his dues, who would probably have been good at number two. But right now, it seems like they need a different kind of decision maker. And you mentioned this, but with players, do you get a sense that there is still support for Jeff Hornacek? When I've read quotes, when I've talked to them, I don't sense that they believe he's the problem. Do you get something different?
I agree with you. I don't think Jeff's the problem. I think it's stability within the organization that we're going in the right direction. I think that when you look at the LaMarcus Aldridge sweepstakes, I think one of the things that happened that I'm aware of is that if you're going to negotiate Tyson Chandler's contract, I think you almost have to simultaneously negotiate LaMarcus Aldridge's deal as well and say, look, we're doing this. We're bringing you both simultaneously. They got it half right, and now they got stuck with his contract. I just see it learning on the job. And I think they've, you know, to me, the best point guard that they had was Goran Dragic.
Right.
And I never, ever saw a guy that was all about himself. I think it was when he made those comments, I don't trust the organization anymore. It was one of those aha moments that says, okay, so that's really where some of these players feel that this organization has gone wrong. Maybe they were promised certain things or said, you are going to, in the Isaiah Thomas acquisition, and now you look at Tyson Chandler on the downside and now the Bledsoe injury, and it's just out of kilter. And I think the sad part about this is that underneath Robert's nose, and I know this is tough for him because he wanted to put his stamp on it, was Jerry Colangelo, who is still relevant, trying to fix the Sixers. They won, I think, three of their last seven. Now, that may not be a lot for a lot of people.
For them, it's a lot,
Robert,
yeah.
Yeah, but why didn't Robert cultivate that relationship and learn from one of the most respected basketball minds in the country? He didn't. He wanted to do it his way, and I think he's paying a dear price for it.
No, absolutely. And I know, I'm sure you've talked to Jerry as well. That phone call was never made, and it's too bad because there's a lot there to offer. He is Jude LaCava, longtime Fox 10 sports director. Jude, thanks for joining us.
Anytime, Paul. Always good to talk to you.
Can always count on Jude having an opinion and having a good one. All right. I am Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports. I'm filling in for Brad Sesmat. We're going to talk about coming up one of my favorite topics, college basketball, and frankly, should we be worried about the state of the game? Here on Sports360AZ.com, also streaming live on AZCentralSports.com. This is the Brad Sesmat Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sesmat Show. Paula Bovin, AZ Central Sports, filling in for Brad. Where is Brad, by the way? Or is it a secret error?
No, he's out of town on business.
Oh.
Enough about Brad, though. Are you okay?
Yeah, I'm... Brad, yeah. Eric,
if we had a camera, that it would be in this building during commercial breaks, not only for when you're here, but when Brad's here. I mean, that's just like high comedy hour. I mean, I'm looking down, I'm doing some research, and I just hear you say, I'm on the air until 11. I'll have, and then I kind of looked at Jared Nielsen, and he was looking at his monitor, and then I realized you were just voice texting.
See, I'm sending a text.
Yeah,
right,
and you have all
here.
These people calling you during the break. You've got like a million things to do this weekend. You're chasing all these stories around the title game. I mean, I know we're going to talk some college basketball, but I just want, are you okay? Is
okay.
Life going too fast?
My head is spinning a bit.
Wow.
All right, we've got the national championship game Monday, and that's exciting. I love being sort of in the middle of the, you know, the sports world right now, and everybody's coming into town, all the big writers. That's fun. It's a big game, but you want to do your best when the big game is in town.
So
I'm
sure.
My head's spinning about that. I got to go pick up my credentials. Yeah, I know. Whoa, poor me. I've mentioned to you, I'm starting to teach a class at ASU on
Congratulations.
Monday. Yeah, thank you. I'm very excited.
Can I sit in?
Yeah, you could.
Okay. I'll probably have no idea what you're talking about, but I'll sit
well,
in.
It's a sports writing class for grad students,
Nice.
But it starts very early in the morning, Eric, so I don't think you'll make it.
On what day? Monday?
7:30, yeah.
7:30.
Yeah,
wow.
Bright and early. But I'm excited about that, but I got to get that ready, and there's just a lot of stuff going on.
Okay.
And then my kids have drama, things I got to help them with, and
college students do have drama. That's the way it goes.
Yes, they lose things and all that. Mm-hmm. So anyway, that's what I was doing. But I'm good.
Okay, good.
Better.
I was just making sure.
Breath.
Just
a little zen.
I'm here for you, you know?
Yeah, I appreciate that. All right. This will make me happy. This will make me forget all my problems in the world if we talk about college basketball. And I want to remind folks, not this Final Four, but the next Final Four is here in the Valley. If you haven't been to a Final Four, it's one of the best sporting events you can attend. And just even if you don't get into the game, just the community, the events going on, there a lot of stuff will be downtown. It'll be really fun. So, but there is a concern, Eric, and I'm interested in your take on this because there's a lot of people who think that maybe the state of college basketball, that it's in trouble, that maybe ratings have been down a little bit. I've noticed on TV. Some will argue, and my husband is one of them, that the level of play has gotten really bad and that it's hard for people to choose college basketball over the NBA. I don't think you have to choose. I don't even think you have to compare. But do you find yourself impacted at all? Do you watch it? Do you not watch it?
I don't watch it as much at this time of year as I did, say, a few years ago or even growing up or in college. I don't know why, but like my clock doesn't start college basketball until the middle of January when the bowl season is over, when we're deep into the NFL playoffs. And I think the naturally when March comes around and it's March Madness, there's always an uptick in the interest for college basketball because you've got the bubble watch and the teams and all that. But I don't know if it's the quality of play. I mean, it might be. But just like we were talking about before the show, last night U of A played UCLA. I was at the GCU game covering the game working, and I didn't see much of the U of A-UCLA game. I saw a couple highlights, and I saw the game-winning shot.
Right.
But in the past, those types of Thursday night games, for me, would be must-see.
Right.
And now it's almost more of like a convenience. And I know everyone has their own opinions on sports. Like, I love college football. You may probably love fill-in-the-blank sport more than college football. But I just think as a general rule, I just don't think there's as much interest right now in college basketball as there was in the past, and I can't really wrap my arms around why.
Well, I think it's a couple things. I think that it, to a certain extent, it's true. I think that what I mentioned, the level of play, the defections, I mean, you know, there's the Ben Simmons of the world that I can't not watch. I mean, he's spectacular for LSU. But there aren't that many of those players, and they leave, you know, they leave as soon as they can. They go on to the NBA. There's the one and done. So I think there's a factor of people who that inevitable comparison of the NBA and college basketball. And if you're going to compare, then it's not even close.
And it takes up a game. Sorry to interrupt, Paula, but it takes a game like Oklahoma, Kansas on Monday night.
They
played nine overtimes or whatever, back and forth, two top teams in the country. It takes a game like that to get on the radar on social media. But after that, after like a day, I think the buzz sort of just dies down until we see another college basketball game at this time of year like that one.
Well, and but the good news is a thing college basketball will have that nobody else ever can compare to, in my opinion, of a postseason is the NCAA tournament. And it's one of the great events in sports. And so I think that's always going to keep college basketball afloat. I could not get enough of that Arizona UCLA game last night. And if you haven't paid much attention to Arizona, they are a different team than you've seen recently. They don't have a breakout star. They're having to rely on a lot of players. That's been good. That's been bad. But I think it's been, other than the ending of that game, I don't know why Tarzewski was, you know, guarding the go-to guy for UCLA who's going to knock in a three-pointer. But Sean Miller does a masterful job, and he's done it again, I think, putting the pieces in. The fact, I think they're a top 10 team this year already, to me, is incredible when you think of the losses and what they're doing. So I think that's a great storyline. I think ASU basketball has been a great storyline, the whole Bobby Hurley factor, his involvement. And I know, you know, they showed a lot of hope early on. I think people were disappointed with what happened against SC. SC is a much better team than they've been in the past couple of years. And I think Hurley's doing the best he can with the talent he has. And this is still a team that needs to add more pieces. So,
and another thing that is sort of hurting, maybe hurting isn't the right word, but I just brought up ASU's schedule.
Sure.
Last night they're on the Pac-12 network. Saturday, they're on the Pac-12 network.
Right.
Next weekend, both of those games are on the Pac-12 network. So if you have DirecTV, I don't need to tell you this story, but we won't be able to conveniently see ASU basketball for 2 weeks just because of the rift that's been going on for years between DirecTV and the Pac-12 network. So that's not helping matters. I know last night's game, the U of A-UCLA game, was not on the Pac-12 network, so people like you got to see it, and they didn't have to go to a sports bar or try to stream it or whatever.
Right.
And that's not helping matters.
No, it's not. And it's, you know, I've gone off on this topic for years. It's just the bane of my existence that these two sides can't come to an agreement. And, from everyone I hear, and granted, I'm hearing more from Pac-12 people, but it sounds like the expectations of DirecTV to get work of a deal have just, you know, the bottom line is that DirecTV is in a position where they can do that. They can kind of hold them hostage. They don't need them as much as a Pac-12 needs them.
Yeah,
so.
But we're talking about the Pac-12. We're not talking about you know a smaller second tier. No offense to the Big Sky, but it's not like we can't see the Big Sky network or whatever. This is the Pac-12. I mean, this is this is in our wheelhouse, West Coast basketball. Most of the country isn't going to watch it anyway because they're sleeping by the time most of these games come on. But the conference is hurting itself because a lot of people can't see these college basketball games during the week.
I wonder if, in addition to that, if having games spread out on so many different days, you know, for so many years it was Thursday, Saturday for the Pac-12, sometimes Thursday, Sunday.
Yep.
It rarely deviated from that. That's changed a little bit throughout college basketball where it's all dictated now by television. And when you don't have that appointment TV like you used to, I wonder if that's impacted people at all. I don't know. I like having more television options, but sometimes you're not sure when the game's going to be on. So there's a lot of things, I think, Eric, that are going on that are causing this problem with the college basketball right now. I just hope it's okay because I think it's the greatest of sport alive. I know it's not looking as good as the NBA, but as I mentioned before, I think there are very few things as good as the NCAA tournament. All right. We've talked college basketball. I'd like to get into college football coming up here in a minute. I talked about this with Jude LaCava, but ASU football and all the reshuffling, things have changed with some players, some of the play calling in their final game, their bowl game. Are you concerned about the state of football at ASU under Todd Graham? I want to talk about that a little bit. I've got some strong opinions here on the Brad Sesmatch Show on sports360az.com and also streaming live on azcentralsports.com. I'm Paula Bovin, filling in for Brad Sesmatch. Welcome back to the show. The show, of course, being the Brad Sesmatch Show, but you knew that, right? My name is Paula Bovin. I work for AZ Central Sports. You may also know our print version as the Arizona Republic. We are streaming live on sports360az.com and azcentralsports.com. We were talking a little college hoops before. I want to talk a little college football now. And what's going on at ASU? No question this team ended the season on a very sour note. The way they lost, some of the decision-making they in that bowl game, not going for two, all those kinds of things. The acknowledgement by the coaching staff that they made mistakes. But there are other things that just make me wonder about the health of ASU football. There have been some recent moves. Chris Ball, the defensive coordinator, co-defensive coordinator and safeties coach, and Chip Long are leaving to join Mike Norvell's staff at Memphis. There's been some changes there. And that's not unusual. I think when, you tend to see turnover with assistant coaches and other opportunities for higher positions come along, guys move. And the reality is, I think in the past, Todd Graham has done a very good job of finding coaches and cultivating young talent and turning them into quality coaches like Mike Norvell. But it just feels weird to me right now, just some of the things going on at ASU, from the coaches leaving to this way the season went, to the lack of production, I thought, by Mike Bercovici and why they didn't get more out of him when I thought there was more there to sort of get. There's those things. There's guys being dismissed from the team. I think one of their most promising defensive players, Ismail Murphy Richardson, he got kicked off the team. There's been the combination of those factors. And this is the first time that I've felt, and I'm not sure what the word is, but concern for fans about the direction of the football program, because I've been through a lot of coaches. I've been through Dennis Erickson and Dirk Cutter and Bruce Snyder, and I covered a lot of those teams, and I thought of all of them that there was a strength in this program, the promise of something great that I hadn't seen there in a long time. I think some of it that had to do with hiring the right athletic director and Ray Anderson. I think he's made some great hires. I thought bringing in a coach from Texas who understands football, the swagger, and grew up in a place where football meant everything, I thought that was a great hire for Arizona State. So I have been a fan of what Graham has done. I think that, there have been far less problems with players, and I know we just talked about one, but I don't think that's defined his stay here. Just sort of the authority figure that I thought they needed, the respect as far as, things that I know a lot of people hate to talk about, but the whole, pulling off your earring when you walk into the coach's room to wearing a tie, as simplistic as those things sound, They lay a foundation for a program that is respectful. And I've talked to coaches at other Pac-12 schools and administrators there, and they say the locker rooms, and these are just little things, but the locker rooms after ASU visits a team on the road is as clean as they've ever seen it under the Graham era. And those are the kinds of things when you talk about respect for a program and players taking their coach seriously. So I'm saying all this because I've been very impressed with what Graham has done at ASU. But this whole thing feels weird to me, Eric, and it just feels like there's something off. And I feel like, and I mentioned this to Jude before, it sort of started with the Bo Graham leaving and then things just kind of unraveled. The whole program has felt out of sync, and I'm wondering if fans are starting to be a little bit worried about where things are going.
I would think so, and I think it's safe to say if ASU football could just do a complete reset on 2015, they'd probably happily do it. From the lofty expectations set by Graham to the beatdown against Texas A&M to the Bo Graham finger quote resignation. Whatever happened there, I think we all know, but whatever happened there. And just the season of, you know, the slow start, lost a couple games, and then they go to UCLA and win, and it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, okay, well, this is finally the team that we thought.
Right.
But they were just a 500 team. Actually, they were a 6-7 team. And I'm willing to give Graham a pass because if you would have taken us back to the Las Vegas Bowl against Boise State, the end of the Dennis Erickson era, and saw what, if you closely looked at what Graham took over, the chaos, the uncertainty, a team that honestly nobody really respected, and he brought in the discipline, and you're going to have incidents. I mean, they have every school, every college football team has, what, 90, 95 kids?
Right.
You're not going to have 95 kids that don't get into trouble.
Sure.
There's always going to be one or two or three or four or whatever. And finally this year, for the first time really under Graham's watch, you had a couple players get into some incidents.
Right.
I'm willing to give it a pass.
Sure.
I mean, he's won bowl games. He's had double-digit wins. He's already won the Pac-12 South. And for now, let's just see what happens. But I do think internally, clearly some people on that staff were not happy. I mean, there's a reason why they followed Mike Norvell to Memphis.
Sure.
But we'll see what happens. I mean, it's going to be an interesting offseason.
You know, and I've always heard, and I've even talked to Graham about this, he is known to be hard to work for. And I don't think that was a surprise. He demands a lot. He's the king, and this is how it goes. But it's been fine because they won under that way. And people, you know, did their jobs because of his expectations. So I don't think anybody is surprised that, at least I'm not, that coaches are leaving. I think probably working under Graham can be a tough situation. But it's never been an issue before because they've won. And I agree with you. I'm all for sort of looking at someone's body of work before you just have a knee-jerk reaction like, you know, get rid of this guy. And I think there's been very many positives under the Graham era. For me, the storyline in the fall is going to be their quarterback situation. Who's the guy and can they utilize, there seems to be some very good, you know, versatile kind of, not just strong arms, but guys who can move with the ball and things like that. That's the storyline I'm looking for and seeing if the guy can develop.
And I'm almost guaranteed that one of the three quarterbacks will transfer. I mean, honestly, Manny Wilkins will be a sophomore. Brady White will be a redshirt freshman. Bryce Perkins will be a redshirt freshman. If one of those quarterbacks excels in spring ball and into fall and wins the job, and it's pretty much clear cut, you're not going to see another Mike Bercovici of a guy that's going to just be the good teammate. I would think, especially because Brady White and Perkins were such decorated recruits.
Sure.
They're going to want to play, and they've already sat out a year. So
It's a nature of that position, and Eric, you know as well as anyone, you were one of the first, I think, to get Kyle Allen. This is a bright kid, a talented kid at a big program, and I mean, even he transferred, you know. You guys want to play.
Yep, and that's in talking to some people close to the situation with Kyle Allen. I mean, the biggest reason why he chose the University of Houston is it might not be the biggest program, but it's a program on the rise, and he's going to play.
Right.
Like, he's not going to go into a situation where there's three other quarterbacks because, as you mentioned, only one can play. It's not like running back or wide receiver where you can get two or three of those guys out in the field consistently. So
yeah, no question. ASU, we were talking about, are you surprised Dirk Cutter is like the hot commodity
The
NFL?
A little bit. I mean, he's been a very successful coordinator, but I just remember in talking to some people close to him, he is an X's and O's guy. He wants to be drying up plays. He wants to be watching film. He doesn't want to be the public PR figure that you must be when you're an NFL coach. He doesn't want to have to do all the interviews. He doesn't want to have to do all the press conferences. But who knows? Maybe, I mean, it's been a while since Dirk has been here.
Right.
And I don't know, maybe I haven't talked to him in years, but maybe he's a little bit more refined than he was, and maybe he's a little bit more adept at handling those situations. I mean, that had to be one of the reasons why he never made it consistently successful at ASU.
I think he's actually would be a very good head coach, and I hope he gets the opportunity because I'd like to see it. I he's paid his dues, and this comes from someone who does not have a good relationship with him. In fact, I've tried a couple times to reach out to him, and he has said he doesn't want to do interviews, and a lot of it has to do with, you know, part of what happened with Dirk Cutter's career here is where things derailed with that whole horrible, sad Lorne Wade situation. That was under his watch, and I know a lot of times coaches are sort of blamed for things they you know, just because it's under their watch. But there were some situations where people felt like he should have reported some things about Lorne Wade a little bit more than he did. And so I think that hurt his career.
And going back to Todd Graham, that's one thing. You have to tip your cap to Todd Graham. I mean, you get in trouble, you're done.
Yeah.
Like, there's no the rules are the rules are the rules. There's no three-game suspension. There's no saying out of first half. It like Ishmael Murphy Richardson, great player, probably would have started next year. But sorry, the rules that are established are the house rules. And whoever you are, if you're a walk-on kicker or a starting defensive player, if you break the rules, you're going to have to pay the punishment.
And you know what? And I get that's hard for some of these coaches. They're by nature sort of nurturers. And these are maybe guys that are, you know, like credit card fraud because they don't have a lot of money. And so they were trying to come up with ways. I think a lot of times they see, you know, you want to give a guy a second chance. I think we were talking about Honey Badger before. Mm-hmm. Here's a guy who had got quite a few chances, but somebody took a chance on him in the NFL and talk about how it's paying off. But I think when you're dealing with college students, there has to be a little bit more consistency. Having said that, I think Cutter would actually be a really intriguing hire. I know he is respected by players a lot in the NFL. And right now, you know, he's a quarterback developer, and right now that is the key. You look at the two first round, the two top picks last year were quarterbacks, I think, and their coaches are gone, right? In Tennessee and
Minnesota,
and
yep.
You know, so Jameis Winston. So you've got to be able to develop quarterbacks. I think Cutter can be good at that, and I would like to see him in the NFL as a head coach because I think he'd be pretty good at that opportunity. So it's interesting, Eric, but to hear his name as a guy. Because it just kind of came out of the blue in the last few
weeks. It did, yeah. And we sort of, I mean, he's been coaching the NFL as a coordinator for quite some time,
right.
But it's been sort of under the radar on the other side, on the East Coast. And now, you know, he is at the forefront. His name is on the crawl on ESPN as the hot candidate. So it'll be interesting to see how that story plays out.
All right. Well, we've got a couple good, remind people, the NFL games this weekend. Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, KC, Houston on Saturday. And then the ones on Sunday, I think everybody's interested in, is Seattle, Minnesota, Green Bay and Washington, which could determine, of course, the future of the Cardinals. I'm Paula Bovin, filling in for Brad Sesmat here on the Brad Sesmat Show. Thanks for joining me, and we'll talk to you soon.